there is our theme music, so we get to get started. I'm putting up everyone else's microphone, so friends that we have here, feel free to chat in. Welcome to the Aging Well Together show. So excited, our first show of 2025. Thank you, Alicia is here. Alicia, I still didn't get us. Santa did not bring us a music background, like the sound machine. I know, we're still gonna work on that. There's still time. I know, we've missed it all, but you know, we haven't missed it. And maybe that's, yeah, we'll have it for the new place. And really, and maybe this show will be a little bit about that. It's never too late to create new traditions and new pathways of joy and meaning, and we are gonna do that. But so excited as always. But really, really, I've been looking forward to this show for a while because we set this topic up a few weeks ago and I knew it would be perfectly appropriate. We are in the final throes of the holiday season. It's January 2nd, so we've just started the new year. It's always hard to say the date on these shows because I know people listen to our past recordings, but it's an important time of year. We're still kind of in the holidays. We're still, you know, starting the new year and doing our celebrations. I know we still have a lot of decorations up at home. And while it's a joyful time for so many, it is also a time of intense sadness for those of us who are also experiencing loss and grief during the holiday season or part of the new year, and we're really going to dive into that in this show, and I'm so excited. I have a new friend here, Risa Hanau, who is a licensed clinical social worker with AthoraCare Collective. That's one of our wonderful hospice and palliative care providers in the area, and I'm so excited. Risa was brought to me by a long-term friend and colleague. Cheryl Wink is here. She didn't think she was going to be on the microphone, but since she was visiting, I was like, Cheryl, come on, put yourself in front of the microphone. So we have Cheryl and Risa here just to help us talk about the making sense of the range of emotions that we may be experiencing this time of year, and especially in light, we were talking right before we came on air, some of the issues and sadness and trauma that have happened in our nation and in our world the last even few days. So as always, I am so excited for what we are going to dive into this show. But want to start some New Year's love, shouting out to our wonderful hosts here, always WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carrboro, for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. You can catch us every Thursday, generally live. I was a little sick. I was starting to get sick 2 weeks ago, and so I didn't end up doing that extra show that nobody would have listened to the day after Christmas.
It was the one your daughter was going
to
do.
I know. We were going to do our second annual musical love letter to grandparents, but I did not think I should bring my germs in. I am feeling so much better now that you hear a little bit of the residual. But so generally you can catch us live, but you can catch our show either live or a rerun every Thursday from 2 to 3, either on 103.5 FM or stream us live through WCOMFM.org. That's our website. The Aging Well Together show, besides being hosted on WCOM, it is sponsored and brought to us and the founding partners that created the Aging Well Together show, the wonderfully helpful team at the Orange County Department on Aging. Besides being our wonderful sponsors, they have often been our expert guests on the show. They come back often. And each week, the team, thank you, Marilyn Hoyle, each week the team posts our show on their website, which becomes our podcasts, our recordings, if you will. So if you want to catch up on any of our past shows or find a range of local Orange County aging resources, please go to the Orange County website. And that's the Orange County Department on Aging's website, which is www.orangecountync.gov/aging. Remember, you got to add the NC. I was looking up Orange County the other day and I forgot to put the NC, and you know, you get Orange County, California, Orange County, Florida, but no, it is orangecountync.gov/aging, and you will find a host of local resources and the tab to go to our Aging Well Together radio show. This is show 64. I'm so excited about that. You can also, if you want to go a little bit old school and you want to use the telephone, I had someone reach out and they're like, no, I want to use the phone or even email. You can call the Orange County Department on Aging for any questions about resources or if you want to suggest a topic for the show. And their telephone number is 919-968-2070. Then you can also email me if you have suggestions of show topics. We are busy. We're scheduled through January and February, but we've got our spring. I can't believe I keep kind of rushing the season. We're just in Happy New Year, and I'm already talking about spring shows. But we're really popular now at the Aging Well Together show, and Cheryl from AthoraCare has been wonderful helping to bring in other speakers and topics for all of us. So, but you can email me at all one long word, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com with suggestions or feedback. As always, going into a new year, but with our wonderful music from the Carbro Bass Band, the Robert Bradford Quartet. Thank you, Robert and bandmates, for letting us use your original music, Mayfly, for our opening and closing. Alicia, I did think about changing the song, but A, I like it. And B, it'd be sort of complicated because it's already programmed to start at the beginning and the end of the show. And I was like, nah, there are so many wonderful volunteer staff here at WCOM. I don't want to make them upload a different
song. Maybe when we move in a new building.
Maybe, yes. That's it. When we move into the new building, we're going to have fun. Cheryl's taking a picture of us. We're going to have fun changing it up a little bit. But thank you, Robert Bradford Quartet. And you're hearing Alicia, though. I'm going to give you the weekly reminder to put the marathon.
It's there.
To put the microphone closer to you. Welcome, Alicia Reed, my amazing co-host, the fabulous wellness instructor, one of them with the Orange County Department on Aging. She is a community member and volunteer for our county extraordinaire, and she is host of Afternoon Talk with Alicia that starts right after our show at 3 o'clock. Happy New Year, my friend.
Happy New Year. Yay. And welcome.
Yay, welcome. Yeah. All right.
Happy New Year, Heather.
I know.
I haven't seen you all year.
You know, I did not say enough of that, like the goofy, like, see you next year. And yeah, you haven't seen me all year. I sound a little more nasal. I'm sorry. I'll be hopefully more whatever. Oh, wait, we're doing more pictures. Oh, look at me. Hi, we're smiling. Oh, wait, there you go. All right, Cheryl's having fun with our selfies here. All right, clearly, I'm Heather Altman. I'm your nasally coughing co-host here. I've spent over 25 years working in aging services and supports. I help older adults and their families connect with resources in our community. I'm a caregiver for older family members, and at 54, I am focusing on my own changing needs, so I am super invested in how we are all aging well together. All right, let us get to our awesome guest this week. I'm so happy. My new best friend, as of 10 minutes ago, we have Risa Hanau. Am I pronouncing it? Did I do okay with that one?
Yes. Hanau.
Yep. Okay. She's Risa for me. She is the clinical and community educator with AthoraCare Collective, a local hospice and palliative care provider. Risa is a licensed clinical social worker. See, she has the actual skills. We just pretend you are. Alicia and I just pretend by giving our own sort of advice and, you know, comments on there. But we don't actually have
that. You're going to sharpen mine.
She is real live, a licensed clinical social worker who has worked in the hospice and end-of-life field for over 35 years in various roles, including being a bereavement counselor, bedside social worker, and now clinical and community educator, which allows her to interact with staff and the community at large, including coming on our Aging Well Together show. So welcome, Risa.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm so happy to have you here, and I realize here, Cheryl, you can put the microphone a little bit closer to Risa. I realize I didn't, but I want you to be comfortable. There we go.
I'm really short, so, you know.
I know. You and I
reach
both.
Reach me.
Yeah. Are your toes hitting the ground, mine or not?
On the edge of the chair.
So, I know, but I want you to be super comfortable. Yes, Risa, I think we have a guest that might be even shorter than I am, but super excited. And we are all bundled up here in our very chilly WCOM studio. We are constantly fetching here. In the summer, we complain it's too hot, and in the winter, it's too cold. But we are excited about our new studio that we are moving into in a month. So we are bundled up here. But I think I heard when you and Alicia were meeting each other just a little while ago about this being a sad topic. Though maybe I'm just being toxically positive, but I was so excited because so many of us are going through things that I kind of think it's maybe not a joyful topic, but it's a powerful topic.
It's a powerful topic, and it's a realistic topic. There was probably 20, 25 years ago an ad campaign that the National Hospice Organization did, and it showed a woman who was heavy with child, and it said, Everyone deserves special care when they enter this world. You deserve nothing less when you leave this world.
Nice.
And the reality is that grief, whether it is during an illness, after an illness, related to a trauma, is a part of life. Whether we talk about it, whether we name it, it's something we all live with. And so shining a light on it actually is a positive thing.
Absolutely. And I love that you said shining a light on it, because I think we are in this season of light and illumination of things. And so I want to dive all into it, but we're going to take a quick pause to shine a light on you, because we always like to ask our guests just a little bit about who's next to the microphone. Tell us about, like, where are you from and how did you get into the super powerful work of hospice and end of life work?
So I grew up in the suburbs of Philadelphia, and I always knew I liked healthcare. I was a candy striper. I wore my little candy striper uniform.
We still have my sister's in a closet somewhere from the 70s.
Yeah, I wore it diligently, and I knew I wanted to do something in healthcare. I wasn't quite sure. I got an undergraduate degree in psychology, and then tried to decide what to do next. And social work, medical social work, was really appealing. So I went to University of Pennsylvania, and part of Master of Social Work training is doing what they call field placement. Mm-hmm. And I got placed on an oncology unit at a very large inner city hospital in Philadelphia. And it was right at the height of the AIDS crisis. And I spent a lot of time with people that were obviously going through tremendously challenging times. Staff were going through challenging times. And I found that it really resonated with me, because people would say, oh, that's so sad. And I would say, but if I could do something by being present.
Yes.
And I have never done anything but that end of life work my entire career. So I finished graduate school, I moved to North Carolina, I started working on the oncology unit at Moses Cone Hospital, made a lot of hospice referrals, and after 4 years, went to a hospice organization, and I've done that my entire career.
I will talk more offline, because I want this to be about you and not me, but I have gotten so much guidance and support from those who were in medical social work in the 90s doing HIV AIDS work, and it helped my career path, interestingly, going into geriatrics instead of that. But so much powerful work. We're not supposed to play favorites, but it's our show and we get to. And I will say, I've worked with so many social workers and folks, and social workers who are my friends, please don't be insulted by this, but hospice social workers are just, and anyone who works in the hospice world is just different. There's a different, just, I don't know what, you all emit such compassion and such love, and you're just like so I'm so happy that it found you and you found your way. People have asked me at different times, how do you get involved with things that have been so depressing or so, and I'm like, no, for me, I loved your term of being present with them. For me, I try to, you know, I use a little bit more of, like, I try to add a little bit of joy or peace or light during what can be a very sort of dark time. And for me, I find that very rewarding. But
it is, because what's going to happen is going to happen in someone's life.
Yes.
And if I, you, Alicia, if our presence, our being with, our journeying along gives some greater sense of peace, calm, resources, anything that we can do, then we have done something to make the quality of life better, no matter what it is that's going on. Because we can't change that underlying reality.
Yeah, we can't. A friend of mine lost her fiance a number of years ago, and I made her favorite food to bring the next few days, and I was like, no casserole, no food is going to take away the pain. So it's an interesting thing that you talk about when someone has a baby. You can bring food over and, you know, help through something, but I'm like, there's nothing I can do but at least try to take away some of the additional stresses. Like, we can't take away the pain and the suffering, but it's like, at least, and especially in a clinical space, let's just not make it worse.
Right.
All right, so then you found your path. You do a lot of education work. You do a lot of presenting and facilitating. So going into this topic of grief and loss around the holidays, one of the first things that you and I were emailing about is identifying and naming why this is a challenging time of year and different types of grief, if you wouldn't,
right,
or reasons why we may be grieving.
Right. So, you know, the holidays, society kind of sends a message that we're all supposed to be happy.
Happy New Year! We're supposed
to be cheerful. We're decorating. We're baking. We're doing cards. We're, you know, maybe we have family traditions at work, wherever our space is. And that outward message doesn't always match with what our inner message is. Mm-hmm. And that itself can make us very uncomfortable. And so, you know, feeling out of step with the rest of society and having to slap a smile on because that's what people expect.
And you don't want to be seen as a bah humbug or a Scrooge or a Grinch.
Exactly. But the reality is, if I can name the fact that I can go to a party and have a good time, and I can also still have a good cry because I miss my loved one or because I'm a caregiver and it's exhausting and I'm grieving the fact that my loved one can't help me with the baking as they always used to. So, mm-hmm, you know, grief is something that is a part of life. And if we don't acknowledge it, it doesn't go away. And the holidays, to use that light image again, there's a bright light on everybody. And, you know, what are you doing? And all these expectations that are put on people. And we should be able to give ourselves permission to be able to say, this year, today, this is what's right for me, and not have to explain ourselves.
And I love the term permission, and I think I'll get more into that. I want to spend some more time also, like, teasing out, because I was thinking about this a bit, and there are people who may have lost a loved one recently,
right,
and so maybe then there's that expectation that they may be grieving, but then there's folks that may have lost a loved one years ago, but the holidays bring out that tradition issue, sure, and that sadness. And you were also starting to name those of us who are caregivers. And so things look different than how they were looking before, because,
right,
maybe you need to have a more pared down experience.
Right.
I know there's a whole list of other ones. I'll let you say it. And then I was thinking about this last night, those other complexities we may be grieving right now.
Yeah, so, you know, oftentimes people say grief only occurs after a death. Absolutely not true. We grieve the person who can't remember us. We grieve the parent that doesn't interact in the same way. We grieve the person that they used to be. We grieve losses. I may have to stop driving. I may have to, right? We have losses ourselves, and that might keep us from being able to celebrate the holiday the way we are accustomed to. So how do we make that change, and how do we help people support us in those changes? Because it might not be possible to bake the 10 different things or to go to all of the parties, and really trying to tease out what is most meaningful, what gives us comfort. Is it making that one recipe that our mother, who may have died 20 years ago, just having the kitchen smell like that gives me comfort?
Yes.
And just because a loss occurred many years ago, the holidays make many of us reminisce. And when we reminisce, we hear a song, we smell something, mm-hmm, we see a radio, you know, even a program. These things just really touch us and can make the feelings come back up, and sometimes unexpectedly, right? So we're crying in the middle of the grocery store because we're,
yes,
getting the cinnamon because we're thinking about,
yes,
that recipe.
Well, and I have two friends, and I got off the phone with both of them within the hour that spent the New Year's in the hospital with, mm-hmm, their loved ones, one,
yes,
with their husband and another one with their father. And so, yeah, that. So I'm still thinking about all the different complexities. I I'm celebrating 4 years as a cat mom. So we just had the 4 year anniversary of our cats after 50 years of mocking cat people. And
it's your comeuppance.
I know, it really is. And I have a video apologizing for that. I was talking about my different holiday videos. And years ago when I was studying grief at the retirement community where I used to work, there was a whole focus on loss of pets and pet grief. Yes. And I kind of heard it and took it in a more sort of academic, professional way. But now that I truly understand pet love, I mean, that's a whole other, and we have stockings in the shape of paws, you know, from when, you know, so I mean, and anything, can bring up.
Grief is cumulative, right? So grief is not in isolation. So we have had, it was just the 46th anniversary of my grandfather's death. He died when I was 13. Mm-hmm. And I've been thinking a lot about him, which then makes me think about my father. And it's just about the 10th anniversary of his death, which then makes me think about my mother, who died not about a year and a half ago. So grief is cumulative, and pets are a part of that grief. Mm-hmm. When we think about what a pet gives us, they give us unconditional love. They give us physical comfort. They give us snuggles and touch. And in this space where so many people are socially isolated, when we lose a pet that would curl up between our knees, or like my cat that I had for 18 years that slept on top of my head and kept me warm, we miss those things. And one grief then can make us think about another, right? So
yeah, it does become this spiral. So sorry. Yes. Pet losses. It's a thing. And I knew it, you know, when you know it, but then you know it.
Yeah. It's also loss of routine. And there's a lot in grief about loss of routine. And I will say my cat never lived in the house I live in. And I still sometimes put my foot out to make sure she doesn't get out the door when I go into my house.
Oh,
and she never lived in this house. And, you know, grief is something where we have to establish new routines. So if you got your exercise because you walked your dog twice a day, or you were used to having that cat and you fed and, oh, no, I don't need to feed, or right? And it's not just with our pets. It's obviously with our loved ones. And routine, loss of routine is a big part of grief.
There are so many things, and I was thinking about when you talked about the cinnamon in the store and the holiday traditions. I know our family is probably like so many. You take the boxes of decorations out each year, and mine is a mixed family. We have both Hanukkah and Christmas. And so looking through each of the ornaments have a story. Right. My family is Jewish, and my mother passed away 4 years ago. And so pulling out each of the Hanukkah things that she bought us, and then looking at, you know, each ornament, every decoration, everything has a story. And people do that by design. You know, you have the little ornaments that your kids made you in maybe nursery school, and you put them up. So by design, it's a holiday filled with nostalgia and traditions. So how do you counsel folks when all of a sudden they're like, I am used to the routine. I'm used to a certain amount of traditions, and either I don't want to do it in the same way anymore, or I can't do it in the same way. Right. How do they come to you?
my kind of catchphrase is, if it is not dangerous or illegal, it's okay. And what I mean by that is, what you do this year can be what's right for this year. And, you know, if you want to do exactly what you used to do and recreate it, and that gives you comfort, then that's wonderful. If you want to totally throw it out the window and not take the boxes down and ignore it and go to a restaurant and a movie, that's okay also. And you also have to think about who you are, and not everybody in your family or friend group will be on the same page. Mm-hmm. And people can apply a lot of pressure to us. And we need to try to be true to ourselves, and we should be as gracious to ourselves as we are to others.
I want to unpeel that a little bit, because there's the societal pressure. But when we were prepping about this and emailing, you made this comment, which I hadn't thought. I don't know why I hadn't thought about this, but when different members of the family mm-hmm. are experiencing grief differently,
yeah.
And so talk about that, because you were just saying people will come at it. It's hard enough to figure out what you want, and then you have to deal with both the societal pressures, or even just in the store. Hey, you got plans for Thanksgiving?
Right.
Hey, you got that from the others. But people in your own close family and friends, how do you help people navigate that?
I think it's really reflecting on who you are as a family. You know, when we are grieving or the holidays, we forget about our entire lives, right? I have lived 59 years as Risa, and I have ways of sharing information. Some people are more open. Some people don't share as much. Some families keep secrets. Some families share mm-hmm. everything. Some families are mixed families that have, you know, steps and halves and all different arrangements of family. So we have to acknowledge, while we might be a family, we're all individuals. And some people are more comfortable sharing their feelings. Some people would rather write them in a journal. So some people want it exactly the way it used to be. And other
Mom
people,
did it this way.
It is too mm-hmm. painful to walk in and see that table set with the china and the empty chair. And for somebody else, it might be what they're craving. And we have to negotiate and try to figure out what is acceptable for who. And you know, understand that just because it's what you want doesn't mean it's what everybody wants.
And that's a powerful word to negotiate, because my mind's just swirling right now with all of the complexities of managing your own needs and then your family members' needs, who may have different needs, and then mm-hmm. who wins out if it actually becomes sort of a compromise, or do you have to have...
Yeah.
And then if you say, look, I'm not going at all, like, I don't have it in me,
That's okay. You know, if you stay in bed with the blanket over your head, that's as long as you do it only for one day and you don't do it for multiple days. You do it for multiple days, then we want to make sure you're safe and maybe look to a professional. But for one day, that's fine. And maybe there is a negotiation. We'll do it at my house, but we won't sit at the table. We'll do it as a buffet and we'll sit in the living room instead.
Yes.
Where we'll go around and we'll say what we are looking towards in the new year, and anybody who wants to say pass, you can say pass. So we can try to find that middle ground. Mm-hmm. I often think about, what is the middle ground? It doesn't have to be yes or no, right or wrong. There's often a middle ground if we will let ourselves stop and think about it.
So I wish we had done this show a few weeks ago, and then I know Alicia has a question, because this is for listeners. Like, we're giving that permission out. We strangers behind a microphone that you don't see us. But family members, this is your reminder to be caring and thoughtful and patient with each other. Because if you are that family member who's like, nope, we always do it the same way, and if you're the one who is unaccepting a change, if you're the one who feels like, well, this is how it has to be, mm-hmm. and do you need to look in the mirror and do some soul searching about how to make it more comfortable for your loved ones, your friends, your family who may be grieving, that this is your friendly reminder that, what is it, the Taylor Swift, hello, it's me, I'm the problem, it's me,
oh.
Or I am the a-hole series that is going around, am I the, you know, a-hole? I feel like we get to use this microphone in interesting ways, which is we're sitting telling people it's okay to take care of yourself, but listeners, it's also okay to take a step back and let other people
help.
Do what they need. All right, Alicia, my friend.
Well, my thoughts are, question is, do you find that we're in a culture now or time now where the generation is accepting grief or death more openly?
Yeah.
Because it was so behind. It's mm-hmm. like, don't, you know, you die, you go to the funeral, you go home or you eat, and nobody
right.
talks about it. But now...
Mm-hmm. Right. So I think that there is still familial norms, there's still cultural norms, there's some religious norms, there's, you know, ethnicity, race, all these things can give us some guidance in how we you know, talk about grief or don't. I will say, I think that actually the pandemic opened things up for conversation a lot more because all of a sudden people were having to find new ways to communicate, have new ways to have loved one die without being at their bedside. There was a lot of conversation about, you know, missing a traditional funeral, whatever that might have looked like. And so there is more conversation. Children couldn't go to school. They were separated from their friends. Technology, for good or for bad, became more a part of our lives. So I do think that post-pandemic, there has been more openness to conversation. And I think that as people have become more involved in healthcare, generationally, we see people asking questions of physicians and healthcare providers. Sometimes we consult Dr. Google a little bit too much, maybe. But, you know, there's an advocacy that didn't used to exist. And so,
so we're using our voice.
Sometimes I won't say everybody, but many people.
But that is an interesting question about generationally. I think the younger generation, if we can do some stereotypes, is a little bit more open and about the range of emotions and sharing them. It is interesting you brought up the pandemic because, and I wanted to dive into this concept of traditions a little bit. And what I loved about the pandemic is it did blow up traditions in what I think is sort of a great way. So my mother died during the height of the pandemic, what I call the pre-vaccine days of the pandemic. And, you know, odd things to say, but I am so thankful for that. So we couldn't have a traditional funeral because there were rules, you know, people weren't able to get together. But I was able to, you know, we had to get quick COVID test so we could go across state lines. Do you remember that? Like to even stay at hotels, we had to show proof of it. So we had a very intimate 20-person funeral, which was wonderful. Yeah. So it was just my sisters and my dad and our children and our spouses. So that intimacy felt really special, and we hadn't seen each other for a while, so we could have our own reunion, and other family members were pissed they couldn't come, but we could actually say, look, the cemetery, the funeral home, they're not allowing it. But then on the flip side, so as I mentioned, I'm Jewish, and there's something called the Shiva, the after you do the memorial prayers, and it's usually a gathering for a number of days afterwards. We did a Zoom Shiva, and it was amazing. We had over 100 people participate, more people than would have been able to come if we had done it in person. Yes. But to be able to have permission, to go back to that term used, to shake up a tradition and say, hey, we're going to all get together. And then we did it on Zoom, and then we had my mother was all into the deli platters, and then we had deli platters afterwards for the people just in our house, and we all were on different rooms so you could see our faces. But to me, again, I don't want to sound, you know, toxically positive, but it was so cool to not be stuck in traditional boxes of how to grieve or how to celebrate, and to be able to do things differently, but still powerfully.
And I think that for many people, that was the reality. My aunt similarly died, and I was in one of those Shiva rooms also. Yes. I also think that we have to acknowledge there are many people who are still suffering the reality that they said goodbye to their loved one through a piece of glass, right? They were outside and, you know, watching somebody through a window. And so there is still residual grief from that. And I think that's the reality for us, is to recognize that no one person has the same, you know, experience as another, and our experience or our perspective can shift over time. And again, it is creating that opportunity to recognize that it's different for everyone, and different deaths and different experiences, and where we are in our life can dictate how it impacts us.
Absolutely. I know for us, I got to be here, but my sisters couldn't say goodbye, and because they were far away. Oh, Cheryl's leaving us. Goodbye,
this is live
Cheryl.
Radio.
Bye. Thank you for having me.
Cheryl was our audience member, but we made her be by a microphone, so she'll be on in a few weeks, hopefully. Thank you, Cheryl, for connecting us with Risa.
Thank you.
But
thank you for everything.
again, that honoring everyone's different experiences, and then now years later, having that experience of, it changes every year. So for people like us who lost loved ones during the pandemic, and now it's just been a few years out, but I find it's still coming up a lot. Like, hey, I wasn't able to do this, so we're recreating it. And I was thinking last night about, and I couldn't find the right word, the paradox or the paradigm or the complexity of this word tradition. Mm-hmm. And people feeling like they need to follow traditions versus when it's okay to create new traditions. That's been my thing, is I actually think traditions, you can fall into a trap, which then become complacency and then whatever. Like, sometimes it's kind of nice to shake it up. Like, after 3 or 4 years of the same thing.
That would be me.
Yeah, like, that's, and my family's been doing that a lot.
Do,
like,
something different.
Yeah, after a few years of doing something, it was fun the second and third year tradition, but by the fourth year, we're like, no.
Yeah, and I think that, again, we are human, and some people get tremendous comfort from routine and from that tradition because I know what to expect, but then something happens and it's not possible.
Right.
And so to have some flexibility there, you know, there are new people who enter the family, there are people who leave the family, there are people who can't participate the way they used to. You know, the ability for a 5-year-old to participate in a way that is different than the way that a, you know, 12-year-old can participate. So I'm not sure that, you know, when we think about grief, we want to make sure that we include our children in thinking about grief also in traditions. And they can have great ideas, and they sometimes also need to be given permission to talk about their feelings, because children grieve differently than adults. So new traditions can be created based on the needs of the members of that family or the family group, because sometimes it's friends, sometimes it's family by blood, by choice.
Yeah, there's so much openness. I think it's this having, and now you got me thinking about my own children who are 19 and 23, and it's so fun. And since I was sick over the holidays, they took over a lot of the traditions. So they were busy decorating and helping Santa and going and doing reindeer food and then cooking food. Like, it was so fun to see them take on new things. So as they get older, but it is this interesting thing about going back to this level of creativity and flexibility and just allowing people the space. And I think there is, you tell me that, how do you deal with the individual grief? And I want to move into collective grief.
Yes. You know? So for individuals, you know, for some people, it is, again, doing what I've always done. For other people, it's in the course of having been a caregiver, I've lost touch with my book club, with my exercise group, with my, you know, faith community. And so I have to reestablish myself, and I have to find new routines because the other ones aren't available to me. Sometimes it is doing a ritual, and so we create a new tradition. Maybe we now do something with nature. Many people find that to
be
healing
or life-affirming.
We did a New Year's walk
yesterday. I wasn't feeling great, so I only did 15 minutes of it, and my husband and my daughter did an hour of it. But yeah, it's like, oh, let's do a New Year's walk.
Right. So, you know, having the ability to create, some people write a letter to their loved one, and they put it in a jar, and maybe next year they'll open it and read those. So there's a plethora. There's tons of things that we can do to either create new traditions, add to a tradition, or we can, you know, gather all of the recipes from our loved one who died and create a book.
I love those, yes.
You know, there's no end to what we can do. And we can try it out. If we like it this year but not next year, we don't have to do it next year. And I think grief can feel so isolating and so much of a I'm the only one going through it, and yes, it is individual, but as you said, it is collective. There is not a person in this world that has not experienced a sense of loss, mm-hmm. and that's what grief is. Whether it's I can't find my favorite stuffed animal, yes. my pet has died, my spouse has died, you know, there are different levels of grief, but it is truly adjusting to a loss.
And what set you off, or what for me, my nieces, I gave them some Hanukkah presents this year that were my mother's favorite chocolate. Mm-hmm. And they called her Dai Dai. We called her Dai Dai. And I was like, these were Grandma Dai Dai's favorite chocolate, because now we're sort of, it's been a few years out. It's not as raw and can be more right. celebratory. And so I was like, hey. And so my sister called me, oh, I explained that was Mom's favorite chocolate when she opened it. So
yeah, last night, I'll tell you, for the last night of Hanukkah, my sister and I, we did the readings imitating our mother's voice, who was this very prototypical New York Jewish woman.
Oh my gosh, same with my mom.
And
did you use the same voice?
Last year, we couldn't have done it because we were on Zoom and we were crying, lighting the candles. You know, more time has passed. Mm-hmm. It was the second Hanukkah, and we were able to, you know, imitate her, and we were laughing.
Oh, we need to talk about this. This sounds like my mother.
That's good.
Did you have a question?
No, that's okay, good. Yeah, I was thinking about your mother when
I know
said
you knew
hers.
It is, and again, for those of us that can bring humor into it. So again, we experience. For me, it's when is it grief that's a heavier thing, or when it's more of a memories and nostalgia and joy and mm-hmm. laughter. And for us, and it all depends on, I think, a lot of things, but also on the way that the person passed, and did they have a long life, and sure. My mother passed of an illness but had a long life, and there was complexity, but when she passed away, I kept saying I feel more relief than grief, because there was suffering and
right.
So now we have our memories are generally positive and celebrations. Right before we got on air, we talked about whether we would bring up an issue of, speaking of collective grief, there has been some incredible heartbreaking trauma that our country and our world is going through right now with things that have happened in the past few days.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What happened in New Orleans is weighing heavy on us. What happened in Korea, the plane crash right before Christmas or right after. And how do you counsel folks like me that are just watching the news and are just feeling a sense
of the impact it has on
devastation,
right.
and
right.
guilt even now?
Right.
There's a number of things to unpack there. One is, anytime you mentioned the way somebody dies, or you know, the difference between an 87-year-old and a 7-year-old dying, right?
Yes.
There's a huge difference there. We have a pediatric hospice program. A kid's path child, a 7-year-old dying, that's an out-of-order death, right? That is not something we expect. Mm-hmm. A lengthy illness, or even an 87-year-old dying, that's a bit more expected. So when something unexpected, an accident, a traumatic event occurs, I said goodbye to them in the morning, mm-hmm. and I never see them again, there's a sense of disbelief. There's a sense of, you know, what did I say the last, mm-hmm. what was my last word? Did I hug them? Did mm-hmm. I tell them? You know, so there tends to be much more, I guess we could say, complicated grief in
yes.
terms of these traumatic events, and when they impact us directly and individually, definitely traumatic grief. But on a more global experience, you know, watching the news, for some of us, we need to turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
We need to limit our exposure. It can trigger memories of a past event. Maybe we were involved in a past occurrence and it's bringing that up for us. Maybe we never dealt with that, and so it's going to resurface for us. It's triggering to us, and we might need to do some work because we shoved it down before and now it's flooding out. And it can make us feel unsafe. you know, do I want to go to a big city? Do I want to enjoy? Am I going to become more isolated or limited? And it's hard.
Well, and there's the traumatic accidents that we've seen, and then the traumatic violence.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And how to make sense of going, and Cheryl, I'm sorry that she just left, and, you know, talking about the violence that have happened at parades and right. violence that happened at a celebration, you know, on Bourbon Street. And yeah. it's like, what do you do with that sense yeah. of, like, here we are having some of us having lovely New Year's Eve and stuff like that, and then seeing others go through this trauma right. and then the sadness and the emptiness you feel out there. Yeah. And then, yeah, so.
And I think one thing that comes to my mind is, how do we also think about our children? What are they hearing? What are they watching? How do we explain cruelty, horror, trauma?
So you're saying it should happen with the parents in the home?
Yeah, I think we have to monitor what our children are watching. I think we have to let children ask questions, but not give more information than, you know, sometimes we give too much information. We should listen to what a child asks us. Mm-hmm. You know, mommy, did something bad happen? And how do we explain that? And we have to think about the age of the child, and we have yes. to only give as much information as the child is asking for. Mm-hmm. But then we also have to self-monitor in terms of, are we feeling guilty if I go and have a good time because there are so many other people suffering?
And, I feel that a lot.
And look, we know ourselves. Some of us, that's the direction we go in. Other people say, I'm going to go have the best time because you never know you have tomorrow. And we're strung differently. We're all different people and react differently. But it is a difficult society, right? Some people feel uneasy just leaving their homes because of uncertainty.
Yeah, and I mean, first we've always had it, and then we had it with the pandemic, and now we have it with other issues that, you know, you make a conscious choice every day to leave your house and say, all right, well, right. what will happen, and how do we support each other?
I do want to make sure, though, to say, while grief is a normal part of life, and grief is something that we can usually manage, and we work through either by ourselves, through journaling, with our friends, maybe with our faith community, with those around us, there's also a space for professional help.
Yeah, when is it? It's hard to know, but yeah, when is it like this is, it's too debilitating.
Right.
You need some help. What are some resources? Clearly, Orange County Department on Aging, we should give a shout out, has a wonderful aging transitions team to reach out to them.
AtharaCare Collective has community grief. So anyone who's served by AtharaCare Collective for hospice and their loved one dies automatically gets offered 13 months of mm-hmm. bereavement services.
How is that communicated? How do people know that?
Anyone who's receiving hospice services from day one, they are told after your loved one dies, you are going to continue for 13 months to hear from a bereavement counselor. Mm-hmm. And there's community bereavement.
So
anyone in the community can call the office for an adult or a child. And so you can come and participate in a group. We have a group for people who have lost a parent. We have a group for people who have lost a partner or spouse. We have groups, actually a monthly group for someone who has lost someone to a completed suicide and also to an overdose. We know that there are some losses that have more stigma attached to them. And those are often situations where people benefit from having some professional help.
Well, and Alicia, to answer your question, my mother was with a different hospice when she passed away, and for 13 months afterwards, I got phone calls, emails, and letters. And funny, I kept thinking I would do something, and it just felt good to get the calls, and I kept meaning to participate in something, and I didn't. But so they really did reach out to me for 13 months, even though my mother was the patient, if you will, the whole family unit is it, part of the client, and they reach out to me and my dad.
It's part of the hospice requirement, actually, the regulations. I will say, though, for the community members, they can self-refer, whether it is, you know, you had somebody die and you would benefit from individual counseling or participating in a group. And we have counselors that are specifically for children because they grieve differently than adults.
Yes.
They're not just little adults. They don't have the same vocabulary, and play is very important also for children.
Well, and I'm so glad you started to talk about what AuthoraCare Collective can provide. Do you want to say this number? I always want to give our listeners, clearly they can go to Orange County, nc.gov/aging for support through the aging transition social work and counseling team. But the AuthoraCare,
anybody can go to the AuthoraCare.org website, or people can call the telephone number. You can call 336-621-2500. Or when you look at our website, you can see we have an office in Greensboro, we have an office in Burlington, and we actually have a 1-800 number. So 1-800-588-8879. And for bereavement services, anybody can call and self-refer.
Okay. Well, we have a few minutes left, and I know I have two questions left, but I want to make sure that you have time to share anything that you want to share that we haven't covered when it comes to how do we support ourselves and others around us who may be experiencing grief and loss. And I think I'd venture to say we all are in some way, but those for whom this is a more intense experience. I realize we're after the holidays now, but we've got the next batch coming up. We got Valentine's Day, we got Easter, we got all the spring ones, St. Patrick's Day, Martin Luther King.
What about the grief of those who are grieving, like the anniversary, the birthday, the
great point,
the other things that are important, the birth of a child,
So that's the concept of bereavement being available for 13 months after a hospice patient dies, is that you go through the first of everything.
So we're
anticipating that birthday, we're anticipating the anniversary of the death, maybe a marital anniversary. Maybe we are anticipating other important days that we shared together. So going through that first year.
That makes sense, which is why you go 13 months, because you also want to hit the gear. Did not realize
that. Now, that doesn't mean grief stops after the first year. And it doesn't mean that we don't grieve at other times, right? I think we prepare ourselves when we know the birthday is coming, or we know the anniversary is coming. But sometimes it is walking past someone who's wearing the aftershave of our loved one, and that brings that grief back. But I guess what I want to say is that because we are grieving does not mean that we cannot thrive. Because we are grieving does not mean that we cannot have joy in our life. Because we are grieving does not mean that we can't be productive. Grief is integrated into our lives. Some people use grief to make meaning. That is, you know, for many people, something occurs and they become a supporter of an organization that helped with their loved one's care, or a disease-specific organization, and they rate. And that's meaning-making, and that's part of working through our grief.
I like that
meaning-making.
Meaning-making is very much a part of grieving. But it is also the fact that we can have two screens open on our computer at the same time. Grieve, and we can also thrive and be happy. So sometimes people will say, oh, you look great, you must be feeling better. And we take that as an insult, because people think we should be sobbing.
but wearing black.
Right. But society also gives us 3 days off to grieve, right? And it takes longer.
I know.
So we get a lot of mixed messages. So I think if we look at grief as a normal part of life, some days are easier, some hours are harder. We can laugh 1 minute, cry the next, and that is fine. If you are having trouble getting out of bed, you are having noticeable changes in your eating patterns, you're having difficulty paying your bills, doing your normal household things, you are thinking of harming yourself, then we want to get care. We want to do something emergent if you're not safe. And if you are really struggling and would benefit from talking to someone, we want to be sure that you know what resources are and people around you can help guide you towards those resources. We want to make sure people are safe.
So helpful. And with our minute left, I wanted to see, are there other tools as folks get ready for these anniversaries or these other holidays, how to prepare themselves? Are there any other, basically any last tools and tips as you go around helping people to name their grief, face
it? I guess what I would say is listen to your inner voice. Don't just go on autopilot. Actually stop and think about what would be meaningful and give yourself, again, permission to do that, and you don't need to explain, apologize to anybody. Do what is good and right for you.
I love that giving yourself permission, and I love figuring out what you need, what to be meaningful. I'll go back to my earlier point. Realize the people around you. That was very powerful for me when you said, you know, there's other people that in your family and others, realizing everybody's going on their own journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how to support them.
Yeah.
Risa, thank you so much. Did you have any final, I want to make sure you've added all your words of wisdom. Okay. Yeah. We're going to have you
all good
back in a few more weeks. We're going to talk about other services and supports that are offered in a very different topic. But I can't thank you for shining the light and bringing light into this and heat into this studio to talk about such a meaningful topic. Alicia, you look deep in thought.
Well, no, she said they're bringing in the heat, but I am glad because we're living in a time where people are being a little more open about this is happening to everyone. Everybody's going to die.
Yeah.
And we never talked about it. It was never grief healing out there.
Right.
And
it was stigmatized.
I think the younger generation.
Yeah, the three of us are all within about 10 years of each other.
Yeah, I'm 65, and I'm seeing it with the
We're in a different generation than the younger folks who are just feeling all the feels.
Right. I think the younger generation are like, hey, is the funeral on Zoom? Okay, I'll Zoom in. I mean, they're that comfortable with it.
Yeah.
Whereas we're like, you're going to come and Zoom? Right. You know, so, you know, I thank you for a lot of enlightenment. I'm going to talk about a lot of things on my show. And just knowing that things have changed.
Look, just having a radio show to talk about grief is pretty cool.
How cool are we? Well, Risa Hanau, thank you. With the Thoric Care Collective. Alicia, thank you. As always, listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you, WCOM, for giving us this great hour and space to do it. OCDOA, Orange County Department on Aging. Thank you for sponsoring, and we will be back next week. Everyone, take care of yourselves and take care of others. Thank you.
We'll be right back.